Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
It's out of here! Home run, Lenny Dykstra!
Stairs rips one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
The Phillies win the game on a base hit by Mitch Williams at 4:40 in the morning.
Swing and a miss, struck him out. It's wacky, wonderful. Bunch of throwbacks has won the National League pennant.
Welcome to a new episode of Continued Success, a podcast that's part of your Good Fight podcast family. I am Justin Clue, Phillies writer for The Good Fight. With me is Liz Rauscher of Yahoo Sports. And today we have a very special episode. But first, Liz, how are you? How's the offseason treating you this week?
No comment.
Exactly. Yes, that's exactly the point.
Because I feel like every day I read something and I feel stupider. I feel like everything is just conspiring to turn my brain into a barely functional mush.
It is getting so weird. Everyone is getting so, like, last week it was like nothing's happening, blah, blah, blah. There's always a there's nothing happening episode of every baseball podcast every winter, at least one. People are getting so weird. We're like now a level below nothing's happening and we're bored to, like, people are saying, oh, the MLB The Show video game is unveiling where these free agents are going to go. Oh, the HTML, the URL code on this link is telling us where one agent is going to sign. Greg Luzinski's popping in to say the Harper signing is on its way to happening. Another guy who claimed to be working for ESPN Trenton, which doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist.
He claimed to have insider info. I mean, It's getting weird. It's not like fake accounts are a new thing, but it's just part of the surreal picture. No real writers are saying anything. And because of that, there's this vacuum where news is supposed to exist that's just being filled by nonsense and just insane, fake, weird shit. And because of that, Liz and I, this week on Continued Success, are not going to take an hour to tell you that nothing's going on. Instead,
you know what's going on.
Right. Instead, we're going to use this platform for something we've intended to use it for a long time, which is reviewing terrible baseball-themed media, whether it's movies or Harlequin romances or what have you. We wanted to do this for a while, and we're going to do it today in this episode. And in the future, we're thinking we're going to be putting these on our The Good Fights Hit and Season Patreon so that it can be bonus content for anyone who is happy enough with what they hear today that they'll give us a $5 motivation to keep doing it. We have a lot of happy customers over there. Not unhappy, but we have a lot of happy patrons over at our Patreon who have been getting exclusive content for some time, and we'd love for you to be a part of that because we love doing this for our audience. So, with no further ado, Liz, today we are going to be discussing the animated feature film Everyone's Hero that I'm guessing it was from DreamWorks. It has that sort of it's a non-Pixar animated film, which kind of tells you how much trouble you're in.
This is produced by IDT Entertainment, which is a Canadian company.
Ah, Canada. Baseball's birthplace.
Yes, I think it's a subsidiary of Lionsgate. It used to be, let me see, IDT Entertainment, according to Wikipedia, it is now Starz Distribution.
Mm.
So this is essentially, you know, they're part of Lionsgate. Their AMC is another one of their channels. And so this is in that. This was when Lionsgate was, I don't know if they still do animation. I hope not.
I mean, this might have been, I could see this ending a lot of people's careers. I could see this being the last thing that a lot of companies did before they were like, well, we're going to have to fucking shutter this place forever. That's it.
Yes.
That's it for me.
I looked up a bunch of, this is a 2006 film. It's a 42% on Rotten Tomatoes.
IMDb gives it 5.8 stars out of 10, which is so high.
Generous. It's very generous. It was directed by Christopher Reeve and two other people.
Yeah. And it was dedicated to Christopher Reeve at the end. Christopher Reeve, the Superman Christopher Reeve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't even think to look up when he died. It must have been... It was before this. So, he died in 2004, so he must have been working on this before he died.
And I got to tell you, you know, if you're somebody who's like, who stumbled upon this and doesn't know what it is, and you're looking for something for your kids to watch, and you're scrolling down the cast list... I mean, Brian Dennehy, Whoopi Goldberg, Ed Helms, Rob Reiner, Richard Kind, William H. Macy, Mandy Patinkin.
Robin Williams.
And Robin Williams, who I was convinced, and Forrest Whitaker, and Joe Torre, and Raven Simone. I was convinced this was a sound-alike, that they had just hired someone to sound like Robin Williams, because there was enough moments where it was like, that doesn't sound like Robin Williams. The Robin Williams character is the owner of the Chicago Cubs, who we're obviously going to talk about. One of my main issues with this movie. But... he goes in and out of the Chicago accent. So you.
But it's not even Chicago. It's like, it's weird.
It's whatever Robin Williams Irish. Wanted to do, basically.
We'll get into it. We'll get into it. I did want to comment that of the writers of this film, there's one guy with a story credit who has no other information on IMDb. Couldn't find anything about him. The actual writers are a guy named Robert Kurtz and a guy named Jeff Hand. Robert Kurtz, the last thing he did was Everybody's Hero. Before that, he's a TV writer. He wrote an episode of Boy Meets World, several episodes of Grace Under Fire, an episode of he has a story by credit in an episode of the Steve Harvey Show. He wrote three episodes of the new Cosby Show. My favorite part of his IMDb history, though, is a show called Hudson Street. Do you
Not
remember this? I do. It was a Tony Danza, Lori Loughlin sitcom. Tony Danza played like a detective, and he falls for Lori Loughlin, a crime
Naturally.
Reporter. It lasted one season.
I can't believe that.
Yeah, so Everybody's Hero was the last thing this Robert Kurtz did. And then Jeff Hand has credits. Let me see. Everyone's Hero was his very third credit. Before that, it was Brother Bear, additional
Ten
story
Ten years
material.
Before Everyone's Hero, he worked on the Pocahontas game for the Sega
oh.
Genesis.
Yes. And then lately, it's just been a whole bunch of Angry Birds crap. So yeah, this movie has some pedigree, guys. The director died before it was completed, and one of the writers has never done anything again.
Yeah, so that's kind of what we're looking at. The talent attracted to this tells me that they had a script that just got into the right executive's hands, who was like, "Look, you know, we'll pay you enough." Like it was money. Everyone did this for money, obviously. So. It just tells me that the right executive with the right connections was like, look, we can get somebody to come in. And like, I've heard many actors say like animated jobs are the best. You go in with your coffee. You just stand in the booth for a while. Like you know, it's a lot less, it's not easy, but it's a lot less taxing than like being the star of a blockbuster action movie where you're up on wires getting thrown around working like, you know, 16-hour days and stuff. So that being said, you know, this movie, let's just say right off the bat, this movie is dog shit. Like, it's real bad.
Real terrible. How much do you think this movie made at the box office?
$700,000.
It made $14 million, according to Rotten Tomatoes.
No. Come on. What was its budget? Did it...
what is the budget? I have no... It doesn't have budget. It does have... let me see... Wikipedia has it as box office $16.8 million. I mean, it definitely made money, but I can't imagine it made much. Oh yeah, the $16 million is including international. It made $2.1 million internationally somehow.
Its budget was an estimated $35 million.
What? What?
According to IMDb,
I thought I would have assumed that this thing would have made money. I did not. Maybe broke even. I didn't think $35 million, but I'm guessing with the the Robin Williams, Whoopi Goldberg, Rob Reiner, Mandy Patinkin, Brian Dennehy quadfecta.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and those aren't all people you're excited to see are in a movie. Like, I'm listing this cast, and these are all people you know. The person who has the most lines in the movie has to be Rob Reiner, who plays a talking baseball. And that's something I just want real quick before we, first of all, this movie comes in under 90 minutes. So that's always telling you something.
87, right under the wire.
But also, I just want to say, like I said, this movie is dog shit and nothing changes that. But I do want to say that beat wise, this movie works. It does. It could have worked. Beat wise, everything's there that could have been done if people gave a shit about this movie when they were working on it. Like, All the characters have arcs, even the supporting characters. That climactic at bat, which we're going to talk about, that makes no sense at all. But in the at bat, like once it is happening, there's four different characters all having their like climactic moments at once, which was like, huh, they made that, it was lazy, but like they made those arcs happen. And the messaging is like typical kids movie messaging, like anybody can be a hero. It was executed so poorly that
it just needed better writing. Yeah. Like there were some really good ideas. There were even some funny moments, I thought, but I'm just like, wow, I wish the dialogue was done by people who know how to write things. Not someone who's written for Tony Danza.
Everything that came out of the baseball's mouth was a joke about farting, pooping, barfing, drooling, smelling, or underpants. Everything. And I want to, we're going to get into the baseball and the talking bat and just the whole lore of that. But let's just start off talking about this movie. And this is when I say lazy, the main character is a kid whose name is Yankee Irving, which is a name so lazy that in the brainstorming session for the character's name, the phrase, it must have been like a 2-second process of someone saying the phrase, who gives a shit? Because nobody gave a shit enough to not name the kid Yankee in a movie about the Yankees, in which, by the way, the Yankees are the good guys and the evil team is the Chicago Cubs. Like, which in 2006, that's just not an accurate portrayal. That is one of the couple of things in this movie that I felt was cruel to show to children as being real, that the Yankees are some sort of this victimized lower party than the Cubs.
They're underdogs.
Who at this point.
It's Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig does not show up in this movie.
Nope. See, that's my question. This movie features Babe Ruth. It features the World Series in which the Yankees and Cubs played each other, which was the 1932 World Series.
Actual team names and mm-hmm. actual logos. So they had to, I'm going to guess a decent part of that budget was licensing.
Yes. However, they involve fake. There was no Cubs owner. Correct me if I'm wrong. I did a very brief amount of research on this, but there was no Cubs owner named Napoleon Cross.
No, and there. I don't believe there was.
Who is the Robin
but also, Williams I mean, this World Series is made up. This,
yeah.
All right, we'll get into. All right, we're going to talk about things, and no one knows what we're talking
about.
So I think we have lots of thoughts. So we're going to start. This is it's a journey movie about a young boy and Babe Ruth's lucky bat, darling, which I believe was a real thing.
Yes, that I have heard is a real thing. Yes.
Yes. So
that she talked with Whoopi Goldberg's voice, I would say, is probably made up.
Yeah, I'm going to say if it talks with a voice, it's probably not Whoopi
Goldberg. But please continue.
So we're gonna take you through this movie and give you our thoughts.
Let's go on a journey.
Let's go on a journey together. This starts with Yankee Irving, the kid playing sandlot baseball somewhere in 1932.
New York,
yeah. Somewhere. Mm-hmm. Most likely, I mean, close enough to walk/run to Yankee Stadium.
Yes.
We don't know anything about him yet other than he sucks at baseball and no one likes him.
Yeah, his peers, he is so despised by his peers. They insult, harass, abuse, and bully him to his face without hesitation, which I know isn't unheard of in a movie, but I think every person's line who isn't Yankee is like, you suck, Yankee, or we hate Yankee, or why's Yankee here? And he does suck.
It's like a good 5 to 10 minutes in the beginning of the 5 minutes of this, of him sucking at baseball. You know, he's a smaller kid, so everyone's like, don't swing, you have no strike zone. He's like, but Babe Ruth. And then he swings and everyone hates him because he lost the game for their team.
Yeah, they were trying to help.
They were trying, just don't swing, you stupid idiot. God, this kid. This kid, he's voiced by someone named Jake Austin, who I don't believe has done anything significant. I saw a lot of animated work on his IMDb. We've got some Disney Justice League action. He was a voice in the Emoji Movie.
Voice actors, man. It's where the money's at.
Rio 2.
I'm sure Jake doesn't regret this movie.
The Fosters. He was on The Fosters, so he's done some live action. Oh, she's in 2005 to 2009. He was in 58 episodes of Go Diego Go.
Well, one magical day after sucking at baseball, which occurs 2 minutes into the movie, he finds a talking baseball under a derelict car in the glass-strewn empty lot in which he and his friends play baseball. And
guess no one wants you in the game either, he says to this baseball who's just hanging out under a car. Like, it's just there.
So this is the baseball voiced by Rob Reiner, who makes all the bodily function jokes in the movie.
He's doing his best Jackie Mason.
Yes, he's very mouthy.
Playing to the back of the theater.
Yes, yes, he's quite mouthy. He never shuts up. Everything is a one-liner. He's insufferable.
Catskillsy.
He's awful. He did crack me up when he said, I was peacefully decomposing in the sandlot. Like, all he wants to do is go back to this lot at first and just die. Which, I gotta tell you, I was pretty interested in this concept of a baseball who is ready to die, but also a baseball who hates baseball. And not too long after Yankee finds him, you get like his background in the movie, which, oh, by the way, the movie opens on a first person view of a baseball during a baseball game, which I think, going back, probably the best part of the movie. I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's a cool little, like, it's shot the way it's shot. So that baseball is Rob Reiner's little baseball character. He laments being a baseball because all he ever wanted was to be a home run ball. And he came close, but he was a foul ball instead. And after that, he just, I guess, got lost, taken home, and wound up in this lot. So that just brings up a lot of questions about the life of a baseball in this universe. So I'm assuming all baseballs are alive. And they've accepted that they have the lifespan of like a mayfly. If his goal was to be a home run ball, which is like a 2 second thing, and then what live in somebody's display case forever? I don't know.
Or literally be broken and dead, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, and I want to say, in 1932, a baseball would not have looked that nice.
No.
It would have been gross and disgusting. Even when this was a major league ball. It was in the hands of a 1932 pitcher. It would have had crap all over it, and yet it's totally fine.
Yes.
As much as baseball can be fine.
And throughout the movie, you know, a little later on, we meet a talking bat, and there's mention of tennis balls by these two pieces of equipment. There's the bat talks about a cricket bat she knew once, which opens up the idea that there's all this equipment that talks to each other and has just accepted their lot in life to an extent. Like, the bat has sort of this celebrity about her because she's Babe Ruth's bat. But also the ball is like, I'm ready to die. I also liked how the baseball hated the bat and they used these like fake derogatory terms towards each other. The bat calls Leatherface at one point, which is a Texas Chainsaw Massacre reference for no reason.
The amount of anachronistic bullshit in this movie, beyond the music, which we will get to.
Mm-hmm.
We will get to the music, but at one point there, we'll also get to that. We're almost there. We need to get moving past this beginner part because we don't quite follow Yankee home. We go to a newsreel featuring Babe Ruth and an animation that times looks like an entirely different person.
Yes, we get an exposition block here.
Yes, exactly. I want to say that the animation in this movie is very Uncanny Valley.
Yeah, it's not good. It's that you know, early to mid 2000s where, you know, again, non-Pixar, where they were really just making all these terrible animated films. Like,
Justin, your mic's out.
It is. Oh,
yeah.
Shit. Okay. All right, let me stop it.
this was an era of really poor animation, like Hoodwinked and Over the Hedge, like movies like that were coming out that I feel like there was a lot of just throw shit at the wall, see what sticks.
Lots of flat faces.
Yeah, companies follow, like thinking they could just do what Pixar is doing by casting like famous people to voice talking animals or talking baseball equipment and just like have it be a hit. And they were wrong, clearly.
Yeah, they were. Wow, were they wrong? And so we go to the newsreel, Babe Ruth. He's got his bat. And then we go to I think it's not a cave. It's like an office. It's a darkened office that belongs to the owner of the Cubs, the actual Chicago Cubs. There are logos and names used of two teams in this movie. They had to license them for Major League Baseball. And the owner of the Cubs, what is his name? You knew his
Napoleon
name.
Napoleon Cross,
who's voiced by Robin Williams, God rest his soul, either trying too hard or not hard enough.
I mean, they probably had him for like an afternoon or two and told him to just like, here's the script, go nuts, do what you want. Napoleon Cross is a, like, obviously given by his name, he is very short. He is obese. He is asthmatic.
Possibly Irish. It's hard to tell. His accent is everywhere.
Super deranged, you know, in like a cartoon villain sort of way. Like where he's just, every time they cut to him, he's like smashing figurines of his enemies or screaming.
A fat, mean Edna Mode.
Yeah, making just like nonsensical remarks that kind of just move the conversation along. He and his lackey have a lot of really dumb interactions on the phone.
Voiced by William H. Macy. He voices the pitcher Lefty something or other.
Lefty McGinnis of
McGinnis,
the Cubs.
Thank you. He's sort of like the old pitcher in Major League who has all of the trick balls. You know, he puts Vaseline on it because he has no more talent left. That's essentially who Lefty is.
Yes, he doubles as the owner's sort of henchman whose job is to go out into the world and steal Babe Ruth's bat
decide to do just because.
Yes.
I guess they think
they're
that'll
playing them in the World Series and they think that's going to take away Babe Ruth's powers basically. That sort of drives the plot of the movie because Yankee Irving's father is a janitor at Yankee Stadium. So, after his terrible day in the Sandlot, and after we get that exposition dump about Babe Ruth playing the Cubs in the World Series and the Cubs owner trying to steal, you know, hatching the plan to send his pitcher to steal Babe Ruth's bat, we see Yankee take his father some of his mother's meatloaf to Yankee Stadium for his father to eat. So he just walks into Yankee Stadium, which I don't disbelieve that could have happened in the
30s. 1932, sure. I mean, yeah. And also, I mean, it looks like he's been there a few times, even though later they're just like, you brought your son into the stadium? Into the clubhouse? Like, it's his kid, of course.
And
that happened all the time back then for employees.
And when the kid says there was a security guard there, they're all like, what the fuck are you talking about? So the idea of someone being a security guard at an empty Yankee Stadium at night was preposterous to them. The security guard, of course, being Lefty McGinnis in disguise when he's there to steal Babe Ruth's bat. But that's where the inciting incident happens, in that his father, Yankee's father, who is voiced by Mandy Patinkin, I believe.
For some reason, I don't get it. Lefty is voiced by William H. Macy, who's having a really good time in this movie. Yeah. He's having a good time being sort of like Wile E. Coyote with a voice. Mm-hmm. And I'll give him that much. Mandy Patinkin he's in like two scenes, maybe three. He barely talks, but every time I'm just like, Mandy Patinkin is not a voice actor.
No.
Why?
He's a theater actor, from what I understand. Like, that's why, you know, he's famous for The Princess Bride and a couple of other things. Homeland
and
was still
TV
5 years
show.
Away at this point. Yeah.
Well,
he did
another TV show. It was,
oh, Dead Like Me on HBO.
Dead Like Me, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. I think maybe he did something else. Like, he's worked since Evita. So,
sure. Yeah, he's certainly an employed actor who people, I think they've just wondered why they haven't seen more of him. And I think it's because he is largely a theater actor, or at least that's where his training is, his background. Why he did this, as I assume the same reason everyone else did. because he was a recognizable name that they were like, we'll give you money. And he was like, okay, and did it. Because it's not a big role at all.
But
largely,
he's bad.
Yeah.
He's bad.
Yes. In the middle of the movie, there's scenes with him, his character in it, in which he just doesn't speak. It's just like a catch up. Like, what's this character up to? There he is. All right, back to the talking baseball, talking about a fart.
Yeah. So he runs into security guard when he's in the clubhouse. His dad let him in the clubhouse to buck him up after a shitty day. The security guard is like, get out. We flash to the next morning with the ball, the baseball. He brought the baseball home earlier and discovered that it could talk. And we found out that his mother, who is voiced by Christopher Reeve's wife, who has also since passed away. Yes, Dana Reeve. She cannot hear him talk.
The baseball, yeah.
The baseball talk.
Which is
so
interesting.
The next morning,
the baseball doesn't seem alarmed at all that Yankee can hear him speaking, even though it's not normal for a human to be able to hear him speak. And it's never really explained why Yankee in particular is able to hear these baseball equipment talking. Really.
And it's not, we don't even know if Babe Ruth can hear the bat talking. That's never even really explained. So is this just one long delusion? I'm really concerned for this
kid. And I have one more thing. When they're in the clubhouse with his father, before the bat is stolen, the font for this movie, Everyone's Hero, the title, looks a lot like the Finding Nemo font. And the main lesson line from this movie is just keep swinging. This is a repeated mantra. It starts in the locker room. And then I think it's like the last line of the movie. So
If we'd stayed with Mandy Patinkin for the entire movie, I think this might be, Pixar might have had a case.
But in any case, yes, the bat is stolen. The police and the Yankees GM show up at Yankees family's apartment the next day, demanding to know where Babe Ruth's bat is. As
voiced
it's been
by
stolen.
Robert Wagner. I'm sorry. Another Robert Wagner has 5 lines in this movie as the Yankees GM. I don't get it. I'm sorry. I had to point that out. It's Robert Hallmark movie Wagner.
Yeah. He's from Austin Powers. He's a big soap opera.
He was married
guy, right?
to Natalie Wood. He's Robert Wagner.
It's Robert Wagner. You know who he is.
Still kicking Robert Wagner, who chose to do this in 2004. I hope they paid him a lot.
I hope there was a kid who was like, I don't know about this one, Dad. And the dad was like, come on, Robert Wagner. And the kid was like, oh my God, let's rent this movie, Dad. Absolutely. Robert Wagner, great for the, early preteen and younger demographic. Absolutely.
So the police, they come to the house. They fire Stanley's dad because they assume that he took it. They fire Stanley. No one believes Yankee about the security guard. They think that Yankee has the bat.
Can't find it.
They can't find it, which is, the Yankees are going to Chicago to play the Cubs, who have home field advantage, I guess.
Yeah, they also win a couple of games in the World Series. In the 1932 World Series, the Yankees swept the Cubs, so that's also a little confusing.
this apparently went to 7 games in this universe, and we'll get into later what also does not exist in this universe.
Let me just say real quick, in when we spend all this time in Yankee's bedroom with the bat, with the ball that he found, the talking baseball, he's holding an autonomous, self-aware being against its will, just for the record. Like, this thing, this baseball is like, I want to get out of here. I want to leave. I don't want to be here. And this kid's like, no. And, puts him in a
drawer.
But
it has no arms. How much agency does it have?
He can move around. He moves around the whole movie. He's bouncing around just because he wants to. So he has the method of moving around. There's a point where he's falling down a fire escape yelling, my face, my butt. So he has a butt, too. So he probably goes to the bathroom. So this is a
articulated teeth that he uses at one point to bite onto something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have a question about these inanimate objects and their teeth, by the way, moving forward.
So many. anyway, so Yankee decides, my dad is fired. I have to find the bat. I'm the only person who knows. He's digging through his baseball cards and recognizes Lefty. He's like, well, I got to find him. So they go to Penn Station. He packs his shit up and goes to Penn Station, which... I know what Penn Station looks like. Maybe it's significantly changed since 1932. This looked like Grand Central to me.
Yeah, that's
as someone who used to frequent both of them, I'm like, this looks like Grand Central with the ceiling and the... Anyway, it doesn't really matter. He sees Lefty holding a long box that could really only hold like a bat or something else. Like, of course.
He found so, him immediately. He gets
jumping on top of a giant luggage cart.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Yankee is always climbing on tops of piles of things in this movie and then falling down. That is a main theme visually, as are trains. There are at least three different set pieces involving trains. They could not come up with anything else.
Yes. So they follow Lefty onto the train. He lets the ball go. I have so much about this section. He lets the ball go by people's feet so he can find him. And Lefty's taken his shoes off and his feet smell. But on his way, he passes by a woman in heels. All right, this is 1932. The type of heels that she's wearing do not exist. The woman is wearing pants. And I get why she's wearing pants. Because if the ball had rolled by, he goes, well, hello.
Yeah, and looks up very suggestively. Yes.
And looks up suggestively. If that had been a skirt, which it would have been at the time, that would have been shockingly inappropriate. Instead of just mildly inappropriate.
I think that it probably was.
It was like, it looked like a modern suit.
I think that it probably was in an early version of that scene. And somebody was like, we got to change that. This is a kid's movie.
It's not the only joke like that there is in this movie.
Uh-huh.
They were clearly trying to put a few things in for parents and failing miserably.
Yes. So, yeah, the ball rolls
under. They find him and he grabs the bat and there's a chase scene.
On two different trains, which again, the animation of this part, like the visually it's poor, but like the action wise was very Looney Tunes, you know, kind of like. They weren't just like bopping around doing like boring action cartoon things. It was like, all right, you know, this is kind of like funny, like running outside the train, jumping from train to train. It was not unentertaining. In this movie, it was just, you know, in the context of this movie, it was, you know, not redeeming in any serious way, but it was like not the worst part. And, you know, by the third time that we're seeing a train sequence, you're just bored of it. But this is the first and probably like the longest and it was you know, not uninteresting as far as what they had. The Lefty is chasing Yankee, you know, that sequence, it's fine. But there's a point, oh no, that's a little later, that's a different chase sequence. But you know, they get off the train eventually, and Lefty, who
we don't know where they get off though.
Yeah, we don't know where
I couldn't. And how far away? Because he was headed to Chicago.
Yes.
And so now Yankee has essentially run away from home. Mm-hmm. And he's traveled literally halfway across the country.
Meanwhile, Lefty
might have gotten off before. So we think he's in Pittsburgh, maybe.
Meanwhile, Lefty was smashed into a rail sign that ends the chase.
Sign in the groin joke.
Yeah, which hits him in the groin. And then there is a joke about him saying, oh, you know, it actually doesn't hurt that bad. Oh, no, there it is. That's really bad. Which is a very clear reference to the delayed reaction that getting hit in that part of your body can have. That's very real. And I believe that was for the adults too. And it was more strange, I think, to have that included. That wasn't like they get it. These writers get it. It was more just like, yeah. Like that's it. It was more like they wanted you to know that, yeah, he got hit in the face and groin, but this is a joke about the groin pain. That's what's going on here. And I was like, huh, it was like a very real moment for a cartoon character. And I think that's what was so like strange about it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I thought that that sequence with him on the train was entertaining. They're like jumping back and forth. They have Lefty on top of the train dodging things, and it actually looks pretty neat. And then like then the sun and the groin joke, I'm just like, did they have to end with that? I'm like, of course they were going to end with that. There's no other way to end a train chase scene.
Somewhere around this point, because like you said, now Yankee has run away from home, and at somewhere around here they cut back to his parents. I think they're just like sitting on a park bench or their front stoop at night talking about like, oh my god, like I shouldn't have yelled at him, where did he go? And I kind of just, the idea popped into my head that, yeah, when you lost a kid in 1930, they were just gone. There was like, there's a very high chance that that's just, nope, you don't have a kid anymore.
The end of it.
If he didn't come home at night, well, game over.
That's not your child anymore. It's the world's child.
So that's kind of serious.
Yeah, they don't treat it seriously. And we'll, and later on, there are scenes where they're not talking and they're like hooking up with other people or maybe contacting the police. Like, we have no idea how they found out any of this.
Yeah, it just is shown happening without any dialogue. So you just, you know,
which
as a kid watching
is
that,
a way to accept it. Who cares if you're a kid? It's a way to not explain all of it, mm-hmm. I guess. But, you know, you want your movie to have some internal logic, even if it involves a talking ball and a talking bat, because this is the point in the movie where we're introduced to Darlin, the talking bat, voiced by Whoopi Goldberg doing a Southern accent.
Yeah, I gotta say, this movie was full of A-list actors.
Fucking terrible.
Doing accents that made them not sound like themselves. Whoopi didn't sound like herself. William H. Macy didn't sound like himself. Robin Williams didn't sound like himself. Like, you could believe it was them when you saw the cast list, but they just don't sound like the version of themselves that you are familiar with.
Yeah, like I recognized Robin Williams because I'm a fan, weird fan of Robin Williams, but I didn't know he was in this movie. Like, when I first heard him talking, I'm just like, well, that sounds a little bit like Robin Williams. And I looked over and I'm like, yeah, maybe, maybe not. And I kept listening, like, no, that's Robin Williams. Why is he Irish?
Yeah, I mean, Napoleon Cross was Irish. Oh, wait, no, that's not a real person. So again, I really just think this was them being like, Robin, go nuts. We can't believe you agreed to do this movie. So just get in the booth and go nuts. Whatever you want, we'll use.
The ball's name is Screwy, by the way. I don't know if we said that.
No, we did not.
The ball's name is Screwy.
I missed the sequence where they said what his name was. So eventually the kid was just yelling Screwy at the baseball. And I could not, I was like, oh, okay. I guess that happened. That occurred. All right. And the bat.
Yeah. I didn't know where his name came from either. He said at one point, I call him Screwy. And I'm like, but is that his name?
Huh. I guess.
Is that just a name that you gave to this anthropomorphic baseball?
There is a level of this movie that's very disturbing. The kid's relationship with his baseball. Like I said, baseball doesn't want to be there. Kid holds him against his will and also gives him a name.
He considers it to be his possession.
Yeah, well, like this is like you know, Ramsey Bolton calling Theon Greyjoy Reek and spending a whole season torturing him. It brings a lot of that to mind.
But this kid, here's the thing. This kid, why would you not consider a baseball you found to be your possession? Because presumably he's looked at and held baseballs before. But none of them have ever talked to mm-hmm. him. This is the first one that's talked to him. So I guess I don't completely blame him for treating this thing like it's his possession, because most baseballs don't talk. Most baseballs don't have independent thought.
If I was a kid and I found a baseball that talked to me and I realized I was the only one that could hear it, I would have gone into an empty field and buried that thing as deep as I could. And like become very religious. I would have never fucked with that thing at all. Not at all. I was a very scared little child. Not a fan. So at this point,
I'm sorry. I still can't get over how bad Whoopi Goldberg's accent is.
At this point, Yankee gets off the train and walks to what you could visually make an argument for is like Atlanta. just the way it's like made to look very hot and rural. I guess like in this era, like that's typically the color palette artists go to when they're trying to like convey somewhere in the South. But it's not.
Well, yeah.
And like, I was expecting the tree to be a peach tree. It was an apple tree that he walks under.
Well, and the rest of this movie happens. Not the rest. None of this movie looks like it's taking place in 1932.
Correct.
Everything is far too clean.
Yes, that, oh, yeah, yeah. I think they just didn't bother with the like detailed, like, oh, let's add some more details into the art. They're probably just like, all right, this is fine. This is, yeah, it looks sterile. That's whatever.
Well, and the houses, and like nothing looks like it belongs in that era. None of it. But you've missed the portion with the hobo.
Oh, wait, that was before? Oh, wow.
Yes, the bums. He gets off the train and he escapes Lefty yet again. And he's just walking. He's just walking. They say that I think they kicked him off the train in Pittsburgh, around Pittsburgh, because that's what that is what someone says at one point. The ball gets, Screwy gets snatched by a dog that belongs to They call themselves bums. I call them hobos. In the
cast list, they're listed as hobo and then their name, like Hobo Fred and Hobo Dan or whatever.
Yes. Two of them you'll recognize, at least one. One of them is voiced by Ed Helms, who says, again, three lines, but also the worst line reading of the entire movie. I'll get to that in a second. The other guy is Richard Kind, who has been in a bunch of things. He was in Mad About You.
Tremendous
performer. You know, everyone... Yes, I'm a huge Richard Kind fan. He leans into his voice. He's just very fine with sounding very whiny and very nebbish.
And they clearly were like, Richard, we need a line reading for this like snooty maitre d' later in the movie. It's like one line. So if you could just help us out. And he was like, sure. And he probably like broke that off, got a second like listing, probably got a second paycheck, you know, because he's a pro.
Yes. So they welcome him in, this child. They give him back his ball. They listen to the Yankees game. The Yankees lose. Babe Ruth strikes out more than he ever has. And then Ed Helms hobo says, hold on, I have it in my notes. Hold on. The Babe never gives up. The babe never gives up. He read it just like that. No. And the Babe always bounces back.
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
It is.
How famous was Ed Helms at this point? Like,
in 06, this was heyday. This was Ed Helms' heyday. I think he'd either, he was still on the Daily
that's
Show.
That's true.
At this point.
I guess he was still on the Daily Show, but.
So it was Helms-a-mania.
It wasn't, Hangover wasn't for three more years. The Office wasn't for three more years. So, like, visually, I don't know if you, like, if you're picking him out of a lineup yet, but, so his voice, you know, is also not going to be super recognizable, right? Even though, yeah, he is on The Daily Show and part of that, like, all-star team of correspondents they had for the mid-2000s. He shows up, yeah, like, everyone's hero is, like, the, you know, within the first 10 credits on his IMDb page. So it's early stage Ed Helms, so I guess, why he has so few lines, because he wasn't, like, probably someone they were using to attract people to the movie. But it is just still like, you know, not a great performance for Ed Helms.
No, it is not. I mean, it's animation, so you kind of want to play it for the back of the room, but it's woof. It's just, it's a really terrible
in
line
general,
reading. Right then,
he only spends like 3 minutes with these hobos. They are barely in the movie. That has to be a sequence that was cut short because 1 minute they're listening to the Yankees game. The next, they're splitting up on yet another train sequence.
They're packing up to leave for New York. They want to take him back to New York. That's where he's from. He decides when they all get onto the train and they're like, come on, we'll pull you on. And he's like, no, I'm going to go to Chicago and bring Babe Ruth back his bat. And so he turns around and starts walking. He has no map. He doesn't really know where he is. What direction even is anything in? We don't know where he ends up, but he again walks under the tree. As he's approaching the tree, I have to mention this. Whoopi Goldberg, Darlin' the Bat, is talking. She's telling a story about going to England with Babe Ruth. You know, the Queen gave us this, and then we tried this English sport, and she's talking about cricket, you know, and there was this cricket bat who tried to look down my shirt or skirt or something. Literally, she said that. I don't know why we needed that.
I heard her talk about a cricket bat, and I was using that as part of my, like, this universe of talking sports equipment that apparently he's talking to. I missed that he was looking down her shirt. Like, that doesn't make any sense. They're not wearing shirts.
It does not. Well, it wasn't. Here's the thing. It's either it's trying to look down my something, and the line is muffled because the diegetic sound in the movie is like the kid is putting the bat against a tree, and it muffles whatever word she says. And I couldn't figure it out, but it's definitely supposed to be looking down, kept trying to look down my whatever it is.
Bizarre that they felt they had to include this and other instances of stuff like this. Just strange.
I don't understand, but
but at
so
one
bad.
Point,
and
it
then,
is canon, part of Whoopi Goldberg's talking bat canon, that she was sexually harassed by a cricket bat somehow. That is in this movie.
Yep. What a life this bat must have led. So two neighborhood toughs in this way too clean slightly 1990s looking 1932 neighborhood where black and white kids live together, apparently, which was that was all over this movie. And I was really like that. I don't believe that that is how it would be. Like, these kids are trying to make fun of her, and I'm like, they're not calling her any racist names again. Would not have happened.
And
yes. So,
well, I was just going to say they engage in an apple fight. These bullies start picking on Yankee and making fun of him for talking to the ball as if it's a person, which I got to say, I would have called that out too. Yeah. So then Raven Simone's character shows up, who is a young black girl named, what is her name? Marty. And Marty. she's got a hell
Marty
of an arm.
Brewster.
Her dad plays for the Cincinnati Tigers in the Negro Leagues. Lonnie Brewster, a real person, I believe.
She's not a real person.
Oh, right.
No.
The Cincinnati Tigers were real. I looked that up. Lonnie Brewster.
Yeah, the Tigers are real. I looked it up. Lonnie Brewster, not a real person. Marty is voiced by the great
and
the
her
great
father
Raven
is voiced
Simone.
By Forrest Whitaker, but he doesn't.
He has yes. 5 seconds.
But
in
this case,
movie.
This apple fight is bizarre. It's between Yankee and Raven Simone are throwing apples at the two bullies, but they're all just standing like a couple of yards apart, hurling apples at each other as hard as they can. No one's like jumping or taking refuge behind like any sort of obstacle or anything. They're just standing a couple yards apart throwing apples at each other. And the lesson Yankee learns in this scene is to duck. Like, it's not within his biological instincts to get out of the way of something that's being like hurled at him at high velocity. Raven Simone has to be like, you gotta duck. And like, that's what he learns to do.
Well, what she says is, you can't look at where it's going. You have to look at where it started. And I'm like, I bet this won't come up again. A black person teaching the white kid about baseball.
Well, boy, does it.
Because. Yep. Yep. So they chase off the bullies, and Marty invites this white orphan kid into her home, where he stays for 5 seconds
before an upsetting
Lefty
home
up.
Invasion sequence.
He knocks on the door and says, I've been looking for my son. He's pretending to be the son of this young boy. Then he runs into the house to chase after him because, of course, Yankee does not want to go with this possible
the first thing
child
he shouts is,
molester.
That's not my dad, and runs upstairs. And now, to the credit of the other adult in the room, Raven Simone's mother, she's like, oh, okay.
The
she's
mother.
Not like, well, what? And she's like, oh, okay, like, fuck this. And, like, grabs a broom and, like, chases Lefty. So, like, she gets
it.
That it's a bad situation. But, like, oh, man, that was handled so poorly.
I can't. There were so many other options for what they could have done there
also,
that didn't involve.
He comes to the door,
that.
Rings the doorbell. You as a viewer know it's him, even though they just show a shadow. Yankee is like, oh, dad. When she's like, oh, Yankee, your dad's here. He runs up, takes one look at the guy. And like the guy he's not saying, hi, I'm looking for my son. And I know it's a cartoon, so you're going over the top and he's the villain. But he's standing there and she opens the door and he's like, hello, I'm looking for my son. And she's like, oh, okay, I found a young boy yesterday, like today, like I'll get, just give him to you. Like, you
well,
hear a guy
he runs up is just like, dad. He actually there are, I have not seen a phone. There are, it's 1932, there are no computers. Police stations are connected, most of them are barely police forces at this point. There's no way it could be his father. And it doesn't occur to him until he actually runs right up. It's like, hi, dad. He's like, oh, no, whoops. It's this guy who wants to make me go with him.
Pushes past the mom to run into the house. You know, like that. Yeah, that was, whew, that's some scary shit, man. And then, you know, this is something I had a question about. So during this chase sequence, eventually Yankee gets out of the house. And Raven is like, you know, helping to knock over and trip Lefty as he's chasing Yankee. At one point, Lefty gets close enough to Yankee while he's chasing him to reach for the bat, Whoopi Goldberg, who is sticking out of Yankee's backpack. And she starts snapping at him with her teeth. If you're one of the billions of people, I assume, on this planet who can't hear the talking baseball or baseball bat, what would have happened if she had bitten him? You know what I mean? Like,
that's a good question, because when Yankee was trying to get on the train earlier, the ball was rolling around and rolled off the edge of the train and caught on to Yankee's shoelace with his teeth.
Mm-hmm. Now, you could say that we are overthinking a children's movie at this point, but I got to tell you, even as a kid at the age I would have seen this movie when I was a kid, I'm not ruling out that this would have popped into my head as a question, because, you know, you're willing to accept a lot at the beginning when it's establishing the rules of the universe. But then when you start breaking those rules and raising questions like that, then, yeah, I think even as a kid, I would have been like, OK, so what would that have accomplished? Would he have gotten like a splinter? Would it have just been like the bat rapping him on the knuckles by accident? Or would he have like teeth marks, but then look up and the bat doesn't have a face? Like, I don't, how would that have gone? That just popped into my head.
Yeah. No, I mean, here's the thing, for 10-year-olds would ask these questions. 5-year-olds wouldn't. This movie is not for 5-year-olds. It's for 10-year-olds who have brains. Mm-hmm. When you're 10, you've created your own world.
Yes.
You know, your own imaginary worlds, and you've created your own rules where you've asked questions of yourself and of the things that you want to put in this imaginary world. This imaginary world makes no sense. It makes no sense.
But how anyway. Much sense does it make?
None. So Yankee and Marty give Lefty several concussions and get away. Marty gives Yankee a note to give to her dad, who is in Toledo. He has to go to Toledo and find her dad, because that's where the Cincinnati Tigers are playing. Their next game is in Chicago, so they'll take him. Just has to give him this letter. And so he runs to Toledo somehow. And then we're in Toledo with the Negro League team.
And this is where the movie finally gets some nuance.
It's so white. And they got black actors to play it. They have a white the music throughout this movie is all current. It's all current stuff. It's a white, there's a Wyclef Jean song being played over the scene with the Negro League baseball players all in their uniforms in the on the bus from Toledo to Chicago.
Yes, during just a fun scene. What does he learn? What does Yankee learn in the sequence of balance?
His stance.
Ah, yeah, his batting stance. Okay, yeah, he's on the bus.
Batting stance. The black people teach him about his batting stance when they're playing shadow ball on the bus with a bunch of grown men in their baseball uniforms as they travel on a bus.
Well, and I think one of the players is driving the bus as well.
Yep, one of the players is driving the bus. He is also still in his uniform. I know it's 1932. They would have changed out of their sweaty, dirty, gross uniforms before going, even in the Negro Leagues, where things were for a number of teams, not, you know, they didn't have as much money as the Yankees, obviously, but they would have changed out of their, this bothered me so much, that they were just in their uniforms for hours in the bus.
I will just say that I wrote a pretty in-depth story about a player from the Negro Leagues not too long ago, and the ease with which this chapter of baseball gets forgotten and occasionally erased from just mainstream culture, it really just sucks that so many players have just been lost in time because people are like, oh, I don't care about that. Or like that wasn't real when it was like very real. And there are plenty of extremely talented or like just laudable players from that era and from those leagues that deserve so much attention. The fact that it was in the movie at all is a good thing. It is. The execution, again, stupid. Mm. So poor. Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. It's so bad. It's real. I mean, I'm not going to encourage anybody to rent this movie. You can for $3.99 on Amazon Prime.
Too much.
It's way too much. If I were you, if you have any desire to see this, find it through methods. Don't. I'm not supporting anyone doing anything illegal. But if there's a way to watch this movie with you not having to spend any money on it, you should. Because you will not feel good about yourself.
And come up with a drinking game for it. I think that's the best way to view it. Yes.
I'm not encouraging anyone to watch this movie. But if you do, please tell us what you think. tell us if you've watched this so we don't feel so alone.
Well, at this point, we have to be close to him actually running into Babe Ruth, right?
We are very, very close. Okay. After he, we did miss the scene, by the way, where the where it's raining and he's sad.
Oh, right.
What is that called? The long, dark moment of the soul or something in like a...
Yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's walking, I guess, to somewhere. It's raining and he's sad and he misses his parents. A song by a guy named John Andrusik is playing. You might know him better as the guy from Five for Fighting.
Do you know him better as that?
Most people would, because no one knows who John Andrusik is. They know him as Five for Fighting, but that's not how he's credited in this movie, in all of the songs on this movie. It's like there was some kind of legal thing where he didn't want the Five for Fighting name, his stage name, to be on any of the songs in this movie.
Sure, I'll get paid for it. I don't want to be recognized for it, but I'll get paid. Which, just a reminder, Robin Williams, easily like the most famous person in this movie, playing a very Robin Williams role, uncredited, by the way.
That's why I didn't know he was in this movie. That would be why he's taken the Kathleen Turner and Roger Rabbit route, mm-hmm. only in a way no one will ever remember.
Yes.
Or care about ever again. So they take the Cincinnati Tigers take him to Chicago, and they're driving in. Another current day song is playing, the song Chicago by Chris Botti. This was during the Michael Bublé explosion of the mid 2000s.
Got to get that guy in there.
It wasn't Michael Bublé. It was off-brand Michael Bublé, a guy named Chris Botti. The song is terrible. He's not great. but it's all Chicago, so we know they're in Chicago. They drop him off directly at the hotel where Babe Ruth is staying. And it just so happens Babe Ruth, voiced by Brian Dennehy, comes down in the elevator just as Yankee's walking in. And what he says, he's repeating a line from the song, but he says, "Chicago, Chicago, I'm going to eat some ribs."
You know, that famous lyric from Chicago, the song.
But I was just like, all right, someone was having a little fun and I could appreciate mm-hmm. that line from this shitty song, which I'm sure it's an old song or whatever. He sees him. The Yankees like, I have to get this to him. But of course, Lefty is already there waiting. Somehow, we did miss a scene, a flashback to Robin Williams where he was using Babe Ruth bobbleheads as voodoo dolls. But I don't think bobbleheads existed.
They didn't.
That's
a great note. They didn't come to prominence till the 50s and 60s, actually. So this was decades before mm-hmm. that.
And in the scene before that, or one of the scenes before that, Darlin says something about, can I get a fat-free or a non-fat macchiato, mm-hmm. please, as a joke. I'm like, that also didn't exist. Why are you doing this to me? It's not hard to keep this shit out of your movie.
But I think that's what counts as like a joke or like that adult level of humor. I'm not saying it is effective or good. I think in their minds, that counts as one.
It's not a joke. It's just a thing.
Here's something you will recognize from a time when like that's not when it existed. Like that, for some reason, counts as humor in movies like this. I think that's true.
Ugh. So Lefty switches out the bat for a baguette.
He said that like, he does that because that's a normal everyday situation. I mean,
It's like hanging out the back of his bat, mm-hmm. So he switches it. He tries to bring it to Babe Ruth, and he ends up handing him a piece of bread. At this point, Babe Ruth crouches to the kid. He's being friendly with him, and he says, "I got to tell you, it's really all about the bat. I don't know what it is about the bat. I just tell it where to hit the ball, and it hits it there."
Which is weird, given that other characters then completely refute that philosophy. And like the point of the movie completely refutes that, the whole it's not the bat, it's the batter kind of line. But the other thing I wanted to bring up.
But Babe Ruth is admitting, because we know that this is true. We know that this is true. We know that the bat talks. It has a mind. Unless this is a really complicated delusion and this kid needs to be put away. The bat talks to him. The bat loves Babe Ruth and loves being Babe Ruth's bat and wants to help him and says, without me, he'll never do it. So everything was the bat. Babe Ruth has no talent without this bat, apparently, because in the games that he plays and without it, he sucks.
Not to jump ahead, but at the end of the movie, when someone else, guess who, is using the bat, they achieve their greatest success on a baseball diamond ever. And it's, they say it's not because of the bat, but you could make the argument that that's the only reason it happened. The other thing I want to point out is, we have our stories about Babe Ruth anymore. I think there's, times where he's considered like a boisterous social creature, but I kind of feel like he would hate this kid, that like he would not want to hang out with this kid necessarily. Certainly not as much as he does. Like maybe once in front of everyone, like in the hotel restaurant, he would have been like, yeah, kid, get this kid a banana split. Hey, whatever. But like later he continues to be like super open, generous and giving to this random child, that like in a way that I just feel like old timey baseball player, not going to happen necessarily, especially a guy who's like a celebrity and very full of himself.
Well, Babe Ruth was 37 in 1932. This was his last World Series. This was his last. He only played another couple of years. This was the last. I mean, I guess comparatively, I said this was his last good year. It's his last really great year, stats wise. Like he was older, he'd had a lot of this. I mean, I guess it's kind of up in the air because he was known for being very friendly to children. Babe Ruth loved, not in that way. He was very friendly. He loved, kids loved baseball. He kind of recognized that kids were, the really important part of baseball that people didn't often pay attention to even back then.
All right, then I'm glad so, I'm wrong about that.
Well, no, I'm saying that it's possible, but he was 37 and near the end of his career, bloated and real fat at this point, and he was constantly drunk. Babe Ruth was drunk a lot. He drank a lot. He also ate a lot, but he drank a lot. Like he could have, been happy to see this kid, but also, I mean, I thought it was believable because the kid was kind of a ragamuffin and he snuck into the restaurant to see him. And I feel like that's understandable, with Babe Ruth's personality as we know it. And it was 1932 and ragamuffins were everywhere. So it was the Great Depression.
I'm enjoying your liberal use of the term ragamuffin.
They used it in the movie.
That's just excellent. But also, yes, I think you're probably right. I can buy that. That makes sense.
We're arguing over this tiny, stupid point. That's all we have. Also, at this point, his parents have somehow found the Brewsters.
Right. This is the sequence that I was talking about where there's no dialogue. A police car containing Yankee's parents pull up to the farmhouse, which is near Pittsburgh, in which the Brewsters live. And without hesitation or any explanation, the Brewsters run out of the house and are helped into the police car, and all of the people leave together. Why the Brewsters need to come with them is never explained, other than they want those characters there at the movie's climax at Yankee Stadium. But
I mean, earlier we saw them get on a train. We saw the parents get on a train, but I don't know how or why they're there, how they knew to find them or anything. Like maybe the mom called the police and somehow they hooked up, being it was 1932. I don't understand how any of this happened.
We just weren't communicating.
No one was communicating. Like you know why a bunch of serial killers didn't get caught for a while? Because police departments didn't communicate with each other ever.
Mm-hmm.
They all looked at each other like competition, which sometimes still happens. But
yeah.
It was competition. They didn't talk to each other. There's no... How did they know to go this way?
This is what I mean when I say your kid was just gone. That kid gets so far away so quickly, they never would have found him. Never.
No.
In a million years.
No. Okay. So Lefty gets the bat at this point. Lefty gets the bat. He has the bat. The kid tries to get it back. They're fighting over it. They jump into a car. Lefty jumps into a car with Robin Williams. I'm just going to call him Robin Williams. And Yankee jumps up onto the window as it's driving away and falls into the car and then is kidnapped. The movie does not examine this at all, but this kid is now being kidnapped, because then we go directly to the next day when at the baseball game where Yankee and the bat and ball are in like the owner's box or something, in like a barber's chair, which he had been used, just like a pump up chair that was in his office for some reason. And he's talking to him like, I'm about to call the orphanage.
Yeah. He said, your parents have forgotten about you by now. Also, but you know what?
He's been kidnapped and he's about to be sold into, you know, parentless slavery.
But now maybe this kid knows what it's like to be held against his will and what he was inflicting on the baseball earlier in the movie.
You will not let this baseball thing
go. That's bullshit. That's kids. That's, you talk about serial killers. That's a serial killer behavior right there. Imagine if that was like a little baby bird that he was just shoving into his desk drawer when it was like trying to get out the window. Now.
But it's a baseball. It's a possession.
Absolutely not. No, not. I'm not coming around on this whatsoever. It's possession. A baseball is a possession. A talking baseball that is like, I want to get out of here. That's totally. That's obviously totally different.
We're close to the climax, kids. All right, we're almost there.
I'm glad you're taking point on this because I now don't remember much. Oh well, now we're at the very end of the movie. Yes.
Yeah, we're at the end of the movie here. So Robin Williams makes a mistake that every movie villain ever has always made when they kidnap someone. He leaves the room.
I like that he locks the door. At least he took that precaution.
Yes, he leaves the room. He locks the door. Yankee gives up. And then Screwy has to give him a pep talk and make sure he can continue fighting by mentioning that if he doesn't, his dad will be fired. His family will have no money to pay the rent. And so he's essentially just making sure he knows there is no social safety net, which at this point there was not. There was no social safety net for you. You will be poor unless you keep fighting, 10-year-old child. Stare your possible destitution in the face and understand that it's all your fault.
Yes. Yeah, and at this point, all of our characters, every one of our characters has assembled at Yankee Stadium during a World Series game. So like they're all there, and
almost the at this point the parents of the Brewsters are on their way, and Yankee throws Screwy through the window, the glass shatters, and he is looking out onto the I guess it's Wrigley Field, I'm guessing. And slides down to the field with Darlin and Screwy on a big streamer.
Bunting. Yeah.
Bunting. Thank you. I gotta tell you, the
first time he throws Screwy at the glass to break it and it doesn't break, I thought that was going to evolve into throwing the ball up into the air and hitting him with Darlin. Cause that would have made sense, I feel like, narratively. But no, he just threw him a second time and that time broke the glass, which that doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. So Yankee runs onto the field and they're trying to catch him. He runs to Babe Ruth and tries to give it to him. Now the Yankees are, they've got two outs in the bottom of the ninth, or in the top of the ninth, I think. Yeah. Two outs in the top of the ninth. They are losing. They're about to lose the World Series. It's game 7. So in the 1932 World Series, it only went 4 games. This was Game 4 was Babe Ruth's last world, 10th and final World Series game, according to, I believe, Wikipedia. It's the game that he called his shot.
Yeah, that's right. That's why it's remembered, because...
Babe Ruth calls his shot, and so everything that happens here completely rewrites history. Not only does Babe Ruth have no talent, because it was the bat doing it all for him, from here on in, the called shot doesn't happen.
I could have sworn, when I looked up this World Series and saw that was like the baseball moment that it's chiefly remembered for, I was like, oh, we're going to get, that's going to... come up, or maybe like
it would have made so much sense for it to be building
or
to
Yankee
that.
Doing it, even just as like a reference to it, No, no, just not mentioned. Doesn't happen. Not a thing. Bizarre.
So this is where things get even more bizarre.
This is when Joe Torre's character enters the movie.
Joe Torre is in this movie, kids. Joe Torre is in this, and Lou Gehrig doesn't show up, which is important here because he runs over and gives the ball to Babe Ruth. There's, you know, Robin Williams runs out on the field like, you should have to forfeit. Isn't there a penalty? There's a kid on the field. They've stopped playing or something. The umpire says, you have 2 minutes to get your batter in the box.
Yeah, which was bizarre. It shouldn't take you that long to...
Because, no, but who was supposed to be up? Wasn't there someone who was supposed to be up? Right before all this happened, Babe Ruth was looking out in the field like, gosh, who's going to bat to really turn this game around? Because Babe Ruth had, I think, struck out just before
Yeah, that's right.
So it couldn't be him. But who are we going to put in this game? And I'm screaming at my computer, Lou Gehrig is on your team. Lou Gehrig. But no, Lou Gehrig doesn't make an appearance in this movie. Thank God.
Joe Torre really exercising his acting talents as a coach of the New York Yankees.
He plays Yankees manager. He is unnamed. He says two lines. I'm guessing he did it as a favor. I will mention at this point, this is when I realized Billy Crystal's not involved.
When you mentioned that to me, that is my chief question with this movie. Not only is it a movie about baseball, it is a movie about the Yankees in the era that Billy Crystal imagines every time he thinks about Yankees baseball.
Idolized.
And Robin Williams, his best friend, is in the movie. I have no idea why Billy Crystal is not the voice of that baseball. It must have just been a scheduling thing.
You're right. That's exactly who Rob Reiner is doing Billy Crystal by way of Catskills Jackie
He's
Mason.
He's in full on, hey, I'm walking here mode.
Yes. It's full. Yeah. It's like, I couldn't believe that. Because I'm like Joe Torre and I'm like, wait, the biggest Yankees fan who'll never shut up about it. Who's not in this movie. I'm trying to figure out while watching this why they're out of players.
The umpire says you have 2 minutes to get a batter in the box. First of all, I didn't realize it was a problem they were having that they couldn't come up with somebody to hit. The hitter is the next person in the lineup, or somebody from your bench. Instead, Babe Ruth, Joe Torre, some other guy. I think the GM is there for some reason down on the field.
Yeah, they have GM is
like
there.
A huddled conference right there on the field about like what are we gonna do now? It's not that. Like in depth of a discussion, your options are limited enough to make it sort of you just pick the best player of your available hitters. They make it into this like, I don't know, what are we going to do? And that's when the part of the movie that they didn't bother, like logic is completely out the window. This part makes absolutely no sense because, Liz, why don't you tell everybody who they decide is going to hit?
Who do you think is going to hit, faithful listeners?
That's
Yankee is standing at home plate holding Darlin, and Darlin is screaming at Babe Ruth. This is when I'm like, all right, so Babe Ruth talks to the bat. The bat hears him. The bat talks, but Babe Ruth can't hear him. Can't hear her. It doesn't seem like Babe Ruth can hear the bat. The bat is screaming, it should look over here. Look at how great he looks with this bat. Shouldn't it be Yankee who hits? Yankee, who is 10, not on this team, and is a child?
Illegible, just like rules alone. But yeah, a child who happened to run onto the field. Why isn't he under arrest?
I don't know. Because he's what Babe Ruth says, you can't do that. He's a kid. He said, this is because this is baseball. Anything can happen, which is objectively not true.
That's not the only objectively untrue lesson learned in this movie. At some point, someone says, if Babe can do it, so can you. That's not true. If one of the best players of all time in this sport can do it, why can't you, a child? Well, for obvious reasons.
There are rules in baseball.
He's an adult. You're a child.
Rules exist.
You're capable of different things.
And here, this is what I wrote in my notes. Of course, because the bat is where all the talent is, he's going to be great. Even though Babe Ruth is voiced by Brian Dennehy, by the way. Babe Ruth says, it's not the bat, but the batter, which we know not is true. Not true from everything else that's happened
yeah,
in this
movie. Not only
is
it not, yeah, everything the movie has conveyed, despite, like, they had to say that line as explicitly and bare bones as it was written, because everything else that we were shown in the movie indicates otherwise. Like, the whole, everyone knows the undying truth of screenplays, that it's show, don't tell, because it's a visual format. Anything you can show visually as new as information or lessons to the audience, like, that's how you do it. This movie completely does the opposite of the lesson it's trying to teach you, so it has to just say it. It has to say it's not the bat, it's the batter, even though it's the bat and not the batter throughout the entire movie.
Yes. So this happens, and who else is on the mound but Lefty, who got his job back after successfully stealing the bat. So Lefty is on the mound, the kid goes to bat. The kid is batting in a World Series Game 7, and at, like, they flash to the at this point the hobos who have made it to New York and are listening on the radio. Like, what, a 10-year-old kid?
Yeah, Lefty's, I was going to say friends, but his enemies and harassers in New York from the Sandlot are also listening.
Yes, his parents were in a police car with the Brewsters, and they're driving, and they hear him announced. Somehow the announcer knows his name.
I was going to bring that up. He is announced over the play, like, of the stadium loudspeaker. Impossible.
And on the radio.
Yeah.
Which is how his parents are like, "Wow, he's there." And so they run there. Everyone leaves. They run to the front row, and they're there to watch him, instead of like, oh my God, our child who we never thought we would see again.
He wasn't serial killed. He's instead batting for the Yankees in the World Series.
He wasn't sold into slavery.
Finally, something that makes sense.
He's not living in a dust bowl. He is here. He is batting for the fucking Yankees. So, wouldn't you know it, Screwy was on the field and is now being thrown at, he's the ball that Lefty is pitching. Earlier in the movie, Lefty talked about his new trick pitch, the booger ball?
Yes, the booger ball.
So he snots, like, first he spits all over the ball, he throws two pitches to Yankee, who, before he bats, but when Babe Ruth bestows Darlin upon him to use during this at bat, which, by the way, this bat would have flattened this child.
Yep.
That bat was a monster. The kid says, "I know, don't swing because I have no strike zone," echoing what was said at the beginning of the movie. And Babe Ruth says, "No, swing away or do what's in your heart," or there you go,
whatever,
get him, kid.
Whatever. Meanwhile, this booger ball that Lefty's about to throw, I can honestly say this movie made my gag reflex happen.
Oh my God, thank you. I'm so glad. It's so disgusting.
That was so needless. That was so, like, trashy Nickelodeon. That was so bad. Like, you see this ball.
He blows his nose into the glove with the ball in it, and it just sounds bubbly and disgusting. Oh.
Disgusting.
Just, I almost threw up.
So needless. And of course, that's the pitch that I did, you know, that nanosecond where they sort of subvert the job. I was like, he's not actually left. Yankee's not actually going to hit a home run here, right? And, like, the ball goes straight up in the air, and I'm like, oh, okay. So he just hits a little pop up that lands in the infield. And I did like how they subverted that. But then every moment that follows that is just the dumbest crap. Oh, I did like how, like, it goes on to be a little league home run where, like, he runs to first base. Players are colliding, falling. The one player I love, the one player was just leaning on the outfield wall talking to a woman and flirting with her. And that's why he didn't see the ball and was able to field it for the Cubs. That was pretty funny. But at one point they cut back to Lefty, who had tried to field the ball initially and collided with his catcher. And he's watching the play unfold and goes to, like, help out. Meanwhile, the catcher, dead, just still as like the knight, yep, laying on the ground next, yep, to him, like, not even twitching at all, just out cold, which was so grim. And of course, Yankee is running home. Lefty is standing between home and Yankee with the ball. And Yankee does
catapults over.
He just kind of steps on his head and, like, throws his body over him in some insane move.
Yep, and then he lands right on home plate, and the umpires, who have said all of this is okay, mm-hmm. also call him safe. Mm-hmm. Which, I'm going to guess, we don't know what the score is, really. They don't even do, like, an end of get, you know, I expected them to do sort of, like, a spinning newspaper onto the screen, like, you know, Yankees win World Series. Like, they did sort of a wrap-up at the end. You know, Yankee, you know, goes and hugs his parents, you know, who are happy to see him. Yeah, they talk about, like, the next inning where the Yankees, or maybe it was the rest of that inning, they weren't clear. Because, like, everyone else came in and bat, and they hit, you know, Babe hit three more home runs, and then they won.
Yeah, I gotta say, this being the end of the movie, we then see a quick shot of a parade in New York for the Yankees winning. But I gotta say, Babe Ruth, for as talked up as he is, and as him being a legend of the game factors into the plot of the movie, we never see him do anything but strike out in this movie. If you don't know anything about baseball, you think that guy sucks, and he's fat. Why are we talking about this?
He sucks. He had a magical bat, has no talent. He was just a fat drunk who everyone loved.
And that's the lesson we want our children to learn when we're watching it. That everyone can be a hero.
The owner got arrested, yes. Which definitely would not have happened.
Yeah, a rich white guy gets arrested and is forced to sweep up the confetti of the Yankees parade. That, again, another lie taught to the children watching.
The parade. The Brewsters are there. The Cincinnati Tigers are there. Why?
That doesn't make any sense.
Nope. Lefty is there in his prison stripes. Yep. Like in like shackles in his prison stripes, walking on the parade route as he's getting beaten up. And then the hobos are also there.
Everybody's there, man. Yeah. It's a Yankees World Series parade. The whole country gathered on those hallowed streets to watch that go down. Yeah. And then that's it, right?
And that's movie.
It. Yeah. And then it's over. So that was Everyone's Hero, which, you know, I got to tell you, not super impressive. Not a movie. It teaches a lot of smaller lessons, like the overall lesson being stated that anyone can be a hero. Yeah, that's something you want kids to know. But other movies have taught that lesson with any sort of cohesion, nuance, intelligence. You know, this movie just kind of says it to you and then shows a million reasons why it's not true.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's so many things about this movie that bothered me, but again, the music is the worst. It's intrusive and none of it is period appropriate, which just makes everything seem like it even more unreal than it already is. Like it's Five for Fighting at the end. The last song is called Keep on Swinging by Brooks and Dunn, but I don't think it's the normal guy who usually sings for Brooks and Dunn. I know a bit about Brooks and Dunn. But it's the other guy singing, the guy who never sings that no one recognizes. This is the worst. It's so bad. The song is terrible. All the music it's always too loud, and they're trying to make you feel things with this shitty mid-2000s music.
During the Apple fight, in which Raven Simone's character has like one of her two scenes,
Raven Simone,
Raven Simone sings a song, which is something about keeping your eye on the ball, I think, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's Everyone's Hero, and that's our review of Everyone's Hero. And I mean, you know, it's terrible. And you know what? There's plenty of other terrible baseball movies out there, most of which are for children. Did you know that the Sandlot has two sequels? We will almost assuredly be talking about those in the near future on these movie review episodes of Continued Success. Like we said, we're going to put these on our Patreon. So there'll be fun, exclusive content for any of our subscribers on the Hidden Season Patreon. So we encourage you and all of your loved ones to, you know, any one of you can be a hero. And in this case, being a hero is giving us $5 for our Hidden Season Patreon. Yeah.
We also might do some baseball romance novels, which are very much my thing. We might put one of those on the Made Fiend at one point, but those will mostly be on the Patreon. So again, great content.
Yes.
Awkward uncomfortableness, angry yelling. Come join us on the
We're
Patreon.
Having a lot of fun, and so can you. Eventually, there isn't going to be any free agents to talk about, so this will be the lasting legacy of this offseason. We thank you for listening to Continued Success and invite you to subscribe, download, and review all of our podcasts from the Good Fight podcast family, including this, Continued Success, as well as Hit and Season with John Stolness and The Dirty Inning with myself and Dr. Trevor Strunk. Thank you for listening. And yes, as always, we will talk to you next time on Continued Success.
Hey, everybody. How you doing? Well, that's good. My name is Bill Matz. I am the director of Fun and Games for Broad Street Hockey Radio Podcasts.
And I am Kelly, the deputy managing editor of BroadStreetHockey.com.
I'm Steph Driver, the NHL editorial manager for SB Nation.
And I am Charlie O'Connor, lead Flyers writer for TheAthletic.com.
And together we make up BSH Radio, one of the shows that you get at the SB Nation podcast family. We have a lot coming to you this year, and we want you to listen to our show. It is just an all Flyers, all the time show, so much content. I really hope you listen to it. It is a great piece of the SB Nation podcast family, along with all your other favorite sports.
We all love hockey, specifically the Flyers.
Let's go the Flyers.
The hockey team, the Flyers.